to the table or anything?
No, I want to get Terry Trepanowski's presentation up here a minute.
Doug, did you lose many staff with the furloughs?
On the federal side, we didn't lose anyone. Although over the last 3 years, our staff in general has been reduced 15% on the federal side. We had somewhere around 330 folks. We're now down to 270, but that was through attrition, and we just didn't backfill. The contractor side, for you were asking contractor side, did we?
Well, yeah, both. But.
Yeah, for you mean for the workforce restructuring, we let go of the.
So the furloughs that you're talking about, where you went back to a 32-hour work week, was that just the DOE staff? Or
No, that was the contractors. Those 2,500 folks were the contractors, and June 1st, they're all back on 40-hour work weeks now.
Except
as of June 1st.
We lost on...
Tons.
We lost minimum of five individuals a week, each of the weeks that we were sequestered. And we got raided for a number more. So there were individuals that retired, there were other individuals that, especially the young engineers, were raided. And I don't believe Scanner raided any, but I know Vogel did.
We lost something like 46 IT folks because it's easy for them to go out. So, yeah, during that furlough period, we lost that.
Over 100.
And then, of course, a lot of folks were retirement eligible instead of waiting and taking
it. Yeah, why wouldn't you? Yeah. Any other questions?
You know, if I look at the budget slide, particularly when you talked about the change to the contribution to their pension plan, I mean, it doesn't sound like a very bad news story here. If you're only $20 or $30 million short in fiscal year 13, and a similar number for the fiscal year 14, it really doesn't sound.
Let me go into that. First off, okay, if you look and I talk about 13, you're right, $20-25 million. But when you look at what we were planning for 14 in order to be able to make our commitments in the out years and so forth, the numbers, even though they're similar to what it is, the scope is not. For example, one of the things right here is you see SWPF, now that we're getting a feel for what the salt waste processing facility, that number is going up. So we no longer have excess funds in salt waste processing facility. We're going to have to use more there. And the scope that we had in these programs up here is more scope. So it's a little deceiving when you look at the number and say, well, you're getting the same number here as you did in here, but it's the scope is different. That's what it is. So that you know, like you're saying, $20 or $30 million shortfall in 13 is greater in 14.
What is DOE's justification for, and I don't know that you're doing this, tell me if you're not, continuing construction of salt waste processing when you have another less expensive option in SCSX? And I know that they're not exactly apples to oranges, but you can do a lot with SCSX, which would cost less than what you can do with SWPF.
I'll throw a lifeline to Terry Spears.
you can use as many lifelines as you like.
I told Doug I'd judge the success of his presentation by whether or not I had to stand up.
So I guess you just...
I'm a
failure. I'm Terry Spears. I'm an assistant manager for Waste Distribution Projects. Good to see you all again. Small column ion exchange is a very good tool. We would like to find the funding to develop that and get it brought to bear in the tank farm. We believe that it's useful as a supplement to the capacity that SWPF can provide us. And we, at some point earlier, we talked about risk. And you know, the kind of things that I always speak about is the potential impacts of the workforce of our budget shortfall next year and the buildings, unless that's corrected. Certainly, losing that expertise affects our ability to move swiftly as we have in the past and in the future. The second thing I worry about is the time and risk, in that if we lose the momentum, as we've seen with SWPS sliding to the right, and capacity thing that does, though, is it tends, unless you can mitigate that delay, it tends to push the life cycle off to the right. So the time, the duration that the waste tends to sit in the tank extends off to the right. To me, that's time at risk. It sits there. As it sits there, we safely manage it. We'll continue to do that. That's our primary goal. But as we push off to the right, the tanks, which are already aging, continue to deteriorate, and there's possibilities for problems. I don't like to see that extension. So to the extent we can bring additional capacity, and that's where you get the small column ion exchange, to bear in parallel with operation of the SWPF, that allows us then to get that waste disposition in a more rapid fashion. So in my view, we need both in order to reduce that time at risk and get the job done. So I advocate that we develop a small column ion exchange. We've previously estimated it would take us in the range of $100 million. We've probably invested $10 million. I don't know exactly. Some amount in the past. We've got a lot of work that we have been able to do, in fact, with pension savings some years ago. But with the budget shortfalls and the turn down of the federal support, the congressional support for our budgets, we kind of pulled back and put some of those things on the shelf. We've got rotary microfilters and things like that that we ordered that we can bring to bear. We're going to need another, say, $90 million going forward. I'd like to see us find, you know, $30 million a year, if that's possible. Get small column ion exchange developed and deployed in 3 years would be my vision. And then use that as we bring SWPF online to get the job done faster and avoid that extension of the conference. But that's what I would
do. Okay, you're hunting for the money. Did you ask for it?
We had envisioned and had anticipated about $23 million in our budget. Technology development program that the Office of Environmental Management manages this year, not this year, in FY14 going forward. And we would have used some internal operating funds to supplement the development of that. That's a technology development initiative. It's not a capital asset project, so it's a agreement to use operating dollars. Unfortunately, none of that materialized in the budget.
So we're stuck with just but our only option at this point is constructing a plant that's like 5 or 6 years behind schedule.
That is certainly the prime option. But let me also remind you, we are going to continue to run modular process site solid extraction and therapy this year. That's important that we do that, in that it does allow us to move up to make progress, and it also provides tank space so we can continue to operate the tank space process. The highly radioactive nucleus that we anticipate one day will go to the federal repository. So it's very important that we operate ARP MCU. And again, going back to that tool, it already exists. We've had a very successful operation of that plant since 2008, as a matter of fact. We've processed, like last year, 1.2 million gallons through there per year, much less than SWPF we've processed, but certainly not insignificant. We anticipate processing more than that this year. I believe it's about 1.4 million is what we've broken right now, but we're sitting close to a million gallons. We want to keep operating that. We're installing a new solvent in there as well. It's a solvent extraction process. Last year, you may recall, we went through a campaign to upgrade equipment, repair contactors, enhance the survivability of those, and extend the lifetime of those. This year, we're putting in that new solvent. The solvent then would allow us, had we sufficient budget to prepare feed and disposal space for the treated residuals, allow us this coming year to ramp up to about 3 million gallons a year. So as you do that, again, you're starting to mitigate some of the impacts of delays of SWPF, and I'd certainly like to do that. And again, unfortunately, I don't have the budget wherewithal in 14 with the existing request as it goes forward at this time to be able to prepare that feed or to provide a disposal location for the treated residuals for that salt waste. I'd like to be able to do that. But again, I do have that going for me now. I think that's important that we continue to maintain that. But we get that new solvent in there that allows the DF to go up, allows the capacity, the throughput to go up as well. And we could actually increase that. The planning is to go up to 4.6 million gallons with the existing plant. So again, it's important we keep it running. It's important we get the new solvent in there. But we need the budget wherewithal to get the feed ready for it going forward and also
to put the disposal, right?
Products so that we can again reduce that time of risk because there are
And I. And I can't remember all the details, but I do remember that almost everything you have mentioned is going to be affected by the budget, and the whole suite pushes everything back out further down.
Certainly, if it's a one-year impact, it's one thing. What our concern is that the government starts looking at level funding going forward. If that budget gets enacted, the next year is probably going to be the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's important that it's not. Yeah, I don't want to advocate against the president's budget, but and again, it's important to point out we do continue to make progress. We've made tremendous progress in the past. Unfortunately, the pace of that slows down. But I worry about the loss of skills and the extension of our time.
What just to prepare the feed, what additional funding do you think you need to, not just for the small column ion exchange, but to prepare the feed and to fully implement the everything you need with the new solvent?
That's multiple questions, and I don't know the answer to all those as I stand here off the top of my head, but I would say that, as I've mentioned earlier, I told others, the budget that we had for FY12 was the last congressionally enacted budget for the site. That supported our system plan Res 17, and system plan Res 17 was a just-in-time compliance system plan. What we're seeing now with the president's budget is about $100 million by the time it gets sifted down to money on the contract for SRR, about $100 million short from that just-in-time compliance amount we were envisioning that we would see year over year. So I would say, you know, if we could see, and I think Shelley mentioned this, a plus up in the budget of on the order of $100 million, maybe $110 million, we could maintain compliance for now. As we go into the out years and as we start seeing a ramp up in production of facilities, whether it's SWPF or ARPCU or SWPF plus small column exchange, we're going to need to see increases in the budget going forward. So again, that's why I don't want to give you a specific dollar amount. I can just tell you that for this coming year, I think the budget aligned with something like the FY12 budget would support our continuing compliance.
Thank you.
I want to rant a minute. So some of these questions are going to be rhetorical, but I'll try and tell you which, or maybe Dave, you might you might just get ready for Doug to throw you a line. I'm looking at this presentation that Terry Trebanowski made to the Energy Communities Alliance, I think in April. And my understanding is that basically the EM budget for 14 is the same. They just repotted it a little bit. So I have a couple of questions that are rhetorical. Why does the gaseous diffusion plant have to be transferred to DOE this year? Why, given the relative successes at Hanford and Savannah River, why would they give Hanford 20% more money and us and reduce our budget 25%? That's a real question. And according to Terry's slide, the total reduction at SRS was 8%, which doesn't sound like a lot until you realize that the entire 8%, or almost all of it, came out of one program, out of liquid waste, which, as we've all said, is the highest risk in the state. And Trebanowski says very clearly that this is a risk reduction. EM is all about risk reduction. So what risks are they reducing? The risk of being sued by Hanford, by Washington State? And then the last question is, she says that this decrease in budget from Savannah Riverside is a decrease in funding requirements for SWPF delays. So again, why does it come out of high-level waste, liquid waste? Those are my questions. Why is liquid waste taking the hit for everybody else?
Can I use that lifeline?
Yeah.
Dave, you want to help me on that one?
How about if I help by saying I hope all of those are rhetorical and you aren't really asking for an answer to those questions?
Actually, I am. Why did liquid waste take this hit?
All I can tell you is that is the outcome of negotiations between the department in Office of Management and Budget to arrive at the budget the president put forward. So that is the outcome. That's not what we requested. It's not what EM requested. It's the outcome of negotiations. And so I really don't have an answer. Unfortunately, I do not have an answer to your questions. All I can tell you is it's not what we believe was a fully compliant budget.
Well, is there a communication does somebody in headquarters or someplace in OMB not, I mean, are they using, for my sense, there's environmental risk and there's business risk. And to me, the most important one is environmental risk, which would put Savannah River at the top of the list, in my opinion. And I realize I'm biased. So is it a communication thing where these people don't understand that we have leaking waste tanks sitting in the water table? That, to me, should be all you need to say.
I can communicate that point was made and was made in the negotiation process by us to EM management, and by EM management in the negotiation in trying to achieve as strong a budget as possible in these type budget situations. But I would be remiss if I didn't remind you that in our system, the president's budget, as it goes forward, is a starting point. Congress is the one that appropriates funds. The executive office does not appropriate funds. And so the president's budget is a straw budget that is presented to Congress. Congress is then to take that and enact a budget that weighs even some of the things that you mentioned. And so,
but I can still disagree. It's a straw budget that should never have, I mean, to me, if people understood what was going on at Savannah River, they wouldn't have put this budget forward like this. But that, I understand, it's a black box. Nobody knows what got shoved out the other end. I understand that. So, okay, so I'm not going to get an answer to that question. I have more. Going back to Vince's comment about your very careful wording about meeting all the regulatory commitments in FY14. Let's talk about the regulatory commitments that we're going to miss, when they start, when they're going to get caught back up. Just this FY14 budget will start missing commitments.
Not in 14.
No, but even if we get money back in 15, we're still going to miss.
My answer, the comment I made to Vince about us having to go back and look at our baselines to see what we're going to have, because we have concerns of what commitments we made that are at risk right now. Can we tell you exactly which ones exactly are the ones?
Can you give me an idea? Because I'm sure you've looked at them.
I don't know. I don't know. Karen, do you have any?
I don't know what they are.
Which ones are at risk? I know the SWPF is at risk.
Yes. Again, Terry Spears. In the liquid waste program, there are a number of commitments that are at risk, either because of a combination of delays in SWPF, which right now we're anticipating will not start up until probably late 2018. That's a multi-year delay. We've got in our system planning for the employee of 17 is just in time compliance. Commitments generally, there were pluses and minuses in there. They're all met pretty much just on time. And that assumed that October 2014 startup for the solid waste processing. So we received an estimate of completion that was revised by Parsons last year, which shows substantial delays and about $400 million cost increase that had to be absorbed. So that's going to be pushed out a great deal. That coupled with reductions in program funding rather than the level funding that we saw back in 2012, for example, this kind of reduction. Those two things drive out your compliance issues, as you might imagine. I want to start by telling you right now, we're very proud verbal commitments in our federal facility agreement, which are numerous, and we are, I think, ahead of schedule with respect to closure commitments for our tanks. We've closed two, as we talked about 18, 19. This year we'll work on 5 and 6. Those commitments aren't due until 2015. So
how long are we going to stay ahead of schedule? When do we start falling behind?
Well, for this year, I'd say we'll stay ahead of schedule. For next year, I'd say it depends, and it depends largely on our funding for next year, because we will close 5 and 6, but 12 and 16, those are the next two tanks to be closed. Our 2015 commitment is to close 4 waste tanks. The 5 and 16 are the 4, so if we don't receive sufficient funding, we're not going to be able to apply that funding to the things necessary to clean and sample and basically characterize samples, which is not an inexpensive endeavor, or grouting at preparations for tanks 12 and 16. We just simply don't have the funding to be able to do that. We'll apply the funding where there's higher degrees of environmental risk than simply for the tanks. And that would slow down the pace. It would likely make it difficult, if not impossible, to meet our FY15 commitment. So that's my first issue. If you go back again and we've publicized System Plan Rev 17, we're in our revision 18 is in draft right now, and it shows the impacts of delay of SWPF. The level funding for the program doesn't factor in the president's budget issues. But if you go back to Rev 17, we showed a 2014 date. We did a sensitivity analysis in there, as we typically do in these models, for a 1 year delay in SWPF to October 2015. That said that with that 1 year delay, we would miss 8 closure commitments. As you might imagine, when you multiply that by 3 or 4, that delay, we miss many, many more than that. Without mitigation, and the mitigation depends on the budget authority, bring to bear, as I said before, those tools that we have and build the infrastructure necessary to support them, then we can mitigate those to some degree. But without that funding, you can't. So we miss numerous forward-looking commitments with the SWPF delay and coupled with reduced funding.
Thank you. Okay, I have more questions, but I think in the interest of time, I will hold them since I live in Aiken, and I'm sure somebody can answer them for me. Does anybody else have any questions?
One point I'd just like to make is that when I talk about the pension contributions, our liability stays the same. So when you just go and say that the law allows us not to make the pension contributions, that means they have to be made up
some point
in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're talking about the funding, even if you had level funding, you then add more that goes to the pension and other indirect costs. So I didn't want folks to think that we're not contributing to the pension.
We need more people to die.
But
sorry.
I'm not going there.
Thank you. Doug, is part of this shortfall that we're looking at right now, is part of it based on the ARRA funding that the site received for a number of years? I mean, was that incorporated into the budget, and then once that was taken back, it increased the gap even further than it would have been with just budget cuts?
No, we actually, when we were going forward with the Recovery Act, we pulled significant amount of scope that was supposed to be done in the 2018-2020 timeframe, and we did that scope. And then when they were talking about shovel-ready type of projects and so forth, we did exactly that. We talked about that footprint reduction about the D&D. Now, that was the scope that was pulled forward, so it was additional scope, not supposed to be the base scope that we had. And so the big problem was we got caught as the Recovery Act, because some of the things that we paid for on the Recovery Act, you it was kind of like dual purpose. It was base type of work, but it was also needed for Recovery Act, so we paid for it out of Recovery Act so that we could do other scope in the base programs. Well, when that ran out in 12, because we got that CR, you didn't see here when we said, well, when it ran out, we knew we needed an increase right here. Well, you didn't get it. It was a bad year for us to have a CR, because that dual type scope that we were paying for under Recovery Act now has to still get done, and it just was bad timing. But no, there was no, you know, we did it here, so we're now penalized in the base code. No, there was no thought for that.
Okay, now I know during the time period or shortly after the recovery funds were received, I know there was a large number of people, new hires, at the site from that standpoint, but also some of that funding was used to maintain jobs apparently that would have been lost had the funding not mm-hmm. been there. Mm-hmm. Now, are all of these people gone now, or some of these people remain, some of these jobs are still in place?
Yep, and when we what we tried to do is you know, as we were heading to, we were looking at site level potential budget shortfalls even as you were heading toward fiscal year 10. So there were actually 798 folks that shifted over to the Recovery Act. So those were folks that we may have had to let go then, but we didn't. We also then, most of our hirees, to the tune of, I think total was about 3,000 or so, were contract, you know, short term, that we knew that we were going to let go once the Recovery Act scope was done. So you had a mixture of, as you went through the Recovery Act 9, 10, 11, and 12, you had attrition. So what we tried to do was to take the folks that were either part of that 798 of permanent folks or those folks that were in the Recovery Act and fit them into the places that they would, okay? When we got to the end of 12, and I talked about that 840 folks that were the workforce restructure, 340 of them were permanent folks. Most of those permanent folks were Recovery Act related scope, finished in 12, and those were the ones that let go. So we tried to backfit the folks, but some of them, and then of course all the contractors that we brought in to do that scope, when that scope ended, they went away.
Okay. I'm new to the council, and if I could possibly, I mean, I would like to see some budget years going back earlier, if we okay. could get like a 10-year look.
I'll try.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Only
five. Yeah, I know. That's what, Doug, I appreciate, and Dave and Terry, I appreciate y'all being as forthcoming as you have been. I mean, we're not shooting the messengers here. We're just trying to figure out where we need to put the pressure. And at this point, I don't know. So I'm thinking I'm going to go to the mountains and rest this weekend. So there may be some emails next week to decide what we should do next. I have not forgotten about the public comment period. I apologize for us running late. We have three public commenters, I think. Clint Wolf, you are the first one on the list.
If you don't mind, I'll just step back here. I think,
well, wait a minute. Do you want to type?
Yeah, I'm sorry. You'll need to.
Yeah, I think a lot of what I had hoped I might say today has already been covered. Shelley covered a good part of it. One of my biggest concerns was that we developed quite a good team approach, I think, to solving some of the issues in the tank farm. The closure of the two tanks last year was a result of a lot of very good cooperative relationships between regulators and contractors and the Department of Energy. And I think the longer we go without exercising that model again, the less likely it is to be as effective, because we raise the opportunity for concerns to grow, particularly in budgetary space and eventually in technology and personnel space. So I think it's in the best interest of the people of the state of South Carolina to get back on track with that model and not only be more effective in reducing the risk, but also be more effective in using the dollars wisely, because these delays and these reductions in scope and reductions in budget do nothing to lower the cost of the project. In fact, they will be increasing the cost of the project. And I'd just like to add that personally, I have a great deal of confidence that the local Department of Energy folks at Savannah River will do a good job of using the money well that they are eventually given to do the job. But I think it's not realistic to expect them to be the ones to go to bat to